Hi there, folks, and welcome to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again. Thanks for joining us today. Great to have you with us. And a big thank you for your sponsorship inquiries, too. I'm happy to report that we've got our first couple of sponsors, the first of which is Alex Watanabe from snaps.talk. Now, he's a super talented photographer from Tokyo, and you may have already seen his work if you've happened to check out the photo gallery from our Tokyo seminar that we did last year. I'll link to that one again in this episode's show notes. But to be fair to Alex, he can do a lot better than what he did for the seminar in a space that's better suited for photography, like a studio or a staged area. So if you want to look like a Hollywood star on your social media or capture a special moment like your child's birthday, or you need high-resolution photos for a sales brochure or for your company website, snaps.talk is the place to turn to. They offer professional photography and videography shootings for social media and print in Tokyo. They're experienced, they're flexible, and they're super affordable. So their rates start from just 3,000 yen, so less than 30 bucks. And photos can be delivered as data, of course, or printed out in several sizes from postcard to poster. So feel free to contact Alex on snaps.talk@gmail.com. That's snaps, as in photographs, .talk, T-O-K, for inquiries. And also check out snaps.talk on Instagram for their project samples. You will definitely not be disappointed. Now, as for our second sponsor, I'll tell you all about them at the end of the episode. So make sure to keep listening after the recording, especially if you're business-oriented. Well worth the wait. Now, this recording that we're going to hear is another conversation that we had with a new client, this one from Hong Kong. And again, the topic is countryside homes, which can be turned into guest houses or yokans. As you've probably heard me mention time and time again this year, the COVID pandemic, which, by the way, is rearing its ugly head again here in Japan. We're okay in Fukuoka, somewhere between 10 to 20 new daily cases for the entire prefecture, but Hokkaido and Tokyo are gaining around 200 new cases per day each, and the country as a whole is well over 1,000 daily new cases, sometimes topping even 2,000. But as far as the property market goes, at least, there is a silver lining here, which is, again, as we've discussed on a few occasions this year, that property prices are significantly softer, mainly in Tokyo and, of course, in Osaka, Nagoya, to some degree in other cities as well. But most of all in the countryside, where prices were ridiculously low to begin with, they're now even more affordable. And since a lot of these are hospitality properties, so they're, particularly the older onsen-type homes, they're completely bereft of all tourists, save from some domestic travelers, and they're extremely anxious to sell, or at least many of them are. So a lot of our clients have been quick to pounce on this opportunity, and they've nabbed some excellent deals all around the country. I'll link to one of those in the episode show notes as well. And this new client that we've spoken to is no different. So the main topics that we discussed with her, aside from the obvious property hunt itself, are related to the various hoops that one has to jump through to start and run such a business, particularly if they don't actually reside in Japan, like this lovely lady. So we talk licensing, management, staffing, and all other things related to guest house business operations. Really information-packed chat that I think many of you who are considering launching such a business would probably find value in. I know I certainly did. So enjoy this conversation, and I shall see you again on the other side.
Cool. I've been listening to a few of your podcasts. They're very informative.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Love your sharing.
Okay, so I looked at the list of properties. So you're really looking at straight out Akias, right? Like as close to abandoned as possible kind of thing.
Yeah, for the price, it's more comfortable for me, that price range. But definitely also looking at the location. Nakano is really where my heart is. Although I've never been, but it seems like it's a good location for someone who, you know, if they're going to Nagano and then they want to visit multiple resorts, ski resorts.
Yep.
And if they're driving, then I think it's a very good place. And for myself as well, when they're not for rental, then, you know, I can stay there as well.
Okay. But you do recognize that the older the place is, the more you'll have to put into it renovation wise. So you just want to be aware of what the budget is actually going to end up being after all said and done.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did very preliminary research online. Oh, okay, how much is it to, you know, just the basic stuff. But structure-wise, I wouldn't know. For the very basic, like how to, you know, put in a new bath, if there's like a new toilet or a new mats or a new wallpaper, those kind of small minus things. So I just wonder if there is any structural problem with the house, would we be able to identify before purchase, or it's not possible?
Well, it's possible, but at your expense. So with these, I mean, normally if it's a house that would be easily sold and easily tenantable, then, you know, the sellers might not want to wait until you finish with inspections and so forth, because they might have other buyers lined up. But in the cases of these older properties that have either been on the market for a while or are going to be on the market for a while, because there's not a lot of people buying them, in those cases, they should be, in most cases, okay with them just waiting for you to have an inspection. But that's something that you'll need to pay for. So it's, depending on the property and the location, somewhere between $1,000 to $2,000 per property that you're going to get inspected.
Okay. So like USD, correct?
Yes.
Okay. It sounds reasonable.
Until you end up looking at 20 of them, and then it's going to be quite an expense. Yeah.
No, I hope just a few, because I'm not sure. I do hear people say, oh, there are a lot of IKEA out there that didn't even make it online. Like being there in person would be better. People can, you know, go talk to realtors. And then they probably have others on hand. I'm not sure if that's true or not, or if that would make a huge difference, or if those are even older houses. But then, so IKEA, I would be interested. Like for a town like Nakano, is smaller. And then I can understand not a lot going on there. Probably population is like they're aging, and then people are not moving into that town. And then so more of them might become available. And prices are just very reasonable. But there is one in particular that really draws my interest, is that it was built in the 1990s, like 1994.
Yep.
Which compared to the other ones there, it's relatively newer, like about 25, 26 years old.
Yep.
And that it looks okay from the picture, but I'm not sure if there will be other problems with it. So I will need your help in, finding a good realtor and, tell me more about that.
Well, the way that it usually works is you let us know which locations in particular you're interested in, and then we would be contacting local realtors on your behalf, so anybody who's serving that area. And then they, of course, have access to the IKEA Bank websites as well, but they also have their own listings that are not in those databases. And then they would once we explain that they'll never have to speak to a scary foreigner in English or anything like that, then they should be okay working with us.
Right.
And hopefully send us listings that they've got, and then we can start reviewing them or doing inspections or whatever you want one by one. So we'll work with the realtor to get the listings, and then we'll work with the local architecture company to get the inspections done. And then once you're satisfied, we can also, you can, of course, come to Japan once they allow people in again, but we can also do everything remotely on your behalf. So it's totally up to you. And the place is designated to be strictly a business, or are you going to first be using it yourself, or what's the plan?
It would be a mix. Actually, I'm quite flexible. It also depends, like we've talked about on the email, like, of course, I do have the idea of running it, putting it online for a short-term rental like Airbnb or other platforms. And then it's mostly during the winter season, the busy seasons where people go, snowboard and ski around in Nagano or Niigata. And then also, during summertime when it's super slow, nobody go there, then I can go there myself with my family, kind of like a vacation home when it's not ran. And I understand how Minpaku, it's only 180 days that we can, rent it out. But go back to the first question that we discussed during our email. If there are any Minpaku administrator that, take care of management of the Minpaku, and also getting the license as well, because from what I saw online, a lot of the Minpaku, the management company, they are mainly in Tokyo, Osaka, or sometimes in Fukuoka and Hokkaido. I'm not sure about Nagano. It doesn't seem like...
There are, unfortunately, there are close to none there.
Close to none, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, usually the way people do that when they do want to run a place like that is they hire staff, because part of the Minpaku requirements is that you have 24-hour designated staff or yourself who are living in the area or very close in the property or very close to it. So in the cities, like you said, that can be worked around with management companies that have staff, you know, in various places in the city that are available. But out there, there's not going to be anyone like that. So if you were planning to actually run a Minpaku business, you would need to hire somebody who's actually going to be either living in the property or close to it.
Does that mean I would have to go down to start my own business route and then... And then hire someone that way?
Yes, that's correct, unless you're going to be living in the property yourself.
But also the other question would be, to get the license, I think, I read it somewhere, I'm not 100% sure, that the applicant or the person has to have like a long-term visa to stay in Japan. For example, if I, because I am not from Japan, I don't have residency there, I don't have a work visa either. So if I, you know, I go ahead and put in the application without having a business license of any sort, then would they take my application? If I am the house owner, I own a house, but I don't live there, I don't have long-term permission to live there.
We would have to look into that for you. I'm not sure if that's a national thing or if it's a regional thing. It could be that part of the Minpaku law actually specifies that overall, but it could also be just a regional thing. I mean, you can definitely open a business without being a resident. That's not an issue. So you open a Japanese company or a branch of a foreign company, and for that you don't need residency. Some sorts of company, like for example, if you want to open a Japanese bank account, you'd need a specific kind of company that would also require a local representative, somebody who is a resident of Japan. And then if you've got that kind of person on your staff, it doesn't have to be a full-time job. I mean, we provide that service to some of our customers as well. But if you have that kind of person as a member of your staff, as your representative here in Japan, then that should, I think, again, it'll take some digging into, but I think that should satisfy that requirement if it exists.
I was thinking, further down the line, that would be probably phase two or phase three of my plan to, you know, ultimately have my own business there, and then to manage the property I have for short-term rental. But I would like to hear more, actually. I haven't done research down that route yet because it's a little too complicated for my comprehension. But yeah. If you do that service for your clients, if you provide that service, I would like to hear more about that as well.
Well, I think the first step would be to find out whether, if we do that for you, if you do have a representative here, whether that satisfies the requirement for Minpaku purposes. So maybe the first step would be to find out exactly what you would need to set up this kind of business, and then we'll see if the solution that we can provide or other companies can provide suits that. But there are other requirements as well. So depending on the area that you choose, each local municipality would have its own bylaws for running a Minpaku business. For example, minimum distance to, like you listened to in the last podcast episode, minimum distance to public facilities or daycare facilities and stuff like that. So I guess the way we would probably do it, if it is designated to be a business from the get-go or at least close to it, probably the way to do it, as opposed to the previous people that we spoke to, would be to first pinpoint some areas and viable properties that you would consider purchasing in those areas. And then before we actually pull the trigger and help you with actually purchasing one of those, we would need to, one, contact the local authority and see what they require and whether that property complies with what they need for it to be run as a Minpaku. And then when the architecture company comes to just do the general building inspection, they can also tell you what it would cost to bring that building up to speed with Minpaku regulations if that's required. And I'm guessing most of them would need at least some work done. So minimum space for guest rooms as a percentage of the common areas, minimum minimum fire and safety requirements and that sort of thing. So maybe we would need a list of locations from you, or if you've already got, like you've sent me a list of particular properties, and then if you can prioritize them for me and let me know which one you're most interested in, and then go down the list from there.
Okay.
And then we'll be able to make inquiries on those particular areas.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Good. Thank you for planning out for me.
No worries.
And then I do have quite a bit of question. Like, for example, now, like, nobody's allowed, you know, no foreigner leisure, at least travel visa, are allowed in Japan. So how are people in general, are they comfortable purchasing property without, you know, being able to go there and visit in person? Or,
well, our customers, how's it like? Our customers are about 80-85% of them are purely long-term lease kind of investors. So they're buying properties that would normally have tenants already in them, unless they specifically want to buy vacant for any reason. And in those cases, just tenancy laws in Japan don't even allow them to enter a property while it's being tenanted. So there's no inspections. Right. They can't enter the property and see what's going on. So vast majority of our customers, even before Corona, were buying remotely. And it, I mean, the best they can do when they come here is just walk around the building or look at a particular area. But unless the property happens to be vacant at the time, they're not going to be able to do much more than that. So for them, it was never an issue. The customers that did come here before they purchased just did it because they wanted to meet us face to face or to look at a particular area that we were recommending, and just to get a feel for a location. But in your case, you're talking about, I mean, customers that buy for personal use do come here because obviously they're buying vacant. They want to look at the property and they want to see that they're, you know, that they fall in love with the place before they buy it. But investors usually are quite okay with buying remotely.
I understand. But I would assume for a remote place that I'm looking into, like, for example, Nagano, Niigata, Nakano is like a smaller town. Long-term rental wouldn't.
Not really. I wouldn't go for that area now.
Right.
I mean, Nagano City maybe, but not the rest of the prefecture. Yeah.
Okay. Understand. Yeah. I don't have a lot of questions actually. You have answered most of them for me. Those that are. That I had in my mind, or maybe a few more. Actually, let me look at my notes. My sister. So I was talking about my sister who were initially interested in this project with me as well. But then she opted out. She has two kids. It's a lot for her. But she did bring up the point because in Hong Kong, when we buy a flat, the land is just on lease. Like the owner, they don't buy the land. They don't own the land. So for Japan, when we buy a house or a condo, like we buy the land as well. Is that correct?
Yes, Japan is the only country in Asia Pacific where foreigners can buy without any limitations. So the land is all freehold, except some very specific agricultural or cultural protected areas. But we would never be operating in those areas anyway. So.
Okay.
Everything is freehold, at least as far as our customers are concerned, yeah.
Okay. And also, in purchasing an IKEA, is that any different from purchasing other vacant houses? The procedure, or as a foreigner, is there any restriction?
No, not at all.
Okay, perfect. And I have heard online for people, they say when they purchase, for example, an IKEA, and then the book value or registered value that the government holds, it's very different from the selling price.
Correct.
So in our case, is it possible to check it beforehand, or usually does that happen often, or how does that go with?
Well, I mean, the seller would have the last property tax statement, which also includes the last official evaluation. So that would be available once we put an offer in. I mean, they don't tend to provide all of these documents before they have an offer on the table. But it would be available. But I just got to ask, how would that affect your decision? I mean, market price and official evals are vastly different in the vast majority of cases. But how does that affect anything in your decision, though?
It's just factoring in the tax part of it, preparing for the budget, and then just the whole calculation.
You'll see what the property tax is before you purchase, so you'll know what to expect for the next few years at least. But because you're going to be running a business, I think you probably, I mean, property tax could be $200 or $300 a year, but the accounting and bookkeeping and corporate tax minimums that you'll need to pay is going to be a few $1,000s a year. That would be the bigger expense to consider, especially if you're buying a smaller places, you know, say up to 5 or 6 bedrooms or guest rooms, that's only going to be generating a certain amount for a year and probably only during the winter. You really want to carefully evaluate that. I can tell you that from our other customers' experience, a place that's running less than 10 or 12 rooms is usually not a very good business investment unless you're actually running it yourself. If you factor in the cost of hiring staff and paying for everyone to do the paying for people to do the cleaning and paying for somebody to maybe go and pick up guests once in a while, that sort of thing is usually, for smaller structures, it's not a very profitable endeavor. I just probably something that you should be aware of in advance. I mean, it works, again, it works if you're living there and doing it yourself, but if you're hiring people to do everything, you probably want to get a bigger place, not those places that you were looking at.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just not going to be very profitable, I think.
In the beginning, of course, having someone to manage it would be the best. Like, they take 20 or 30% of commission, and then cleaning fee, and then other miscellaneous charges, maybe 40%.
No, but you're not gonna be able to do that there. That's the thing.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to pay somebody a monthly salary to actually live there and manage the place.
And for just, would you know the ballpark figure for, you know, hiring someone full time? Because I have no idea of the labor market. What the wages are like in Japan. Would you have any idea?
Well, the best course of action, I'm guessing also you want to be catering to foreign guests eventually. So the best course of action would probably be to hire somebody who's bilingual. And from what I heard from other companies who do that, Craigslist or student union notice boards, places where you might be able to find somebody who'd be happy to actually get their room and board as part of the salary package, that might save you a few bucks on salary.
Oh, interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at a native Japanese person who can also speak English enough to communicate with guests, in that particular area, I'm guessing you're not going to find too many of them. So you'll have to sort of import someone from a big city. And then that's going to be a pretty hefty salary, I think. So I think maybe young people who are actually looking for something that includes room and board would be a better bet.
Oh, great. Good idea. Now that we're touching on this topic, actually, a couple of my other friends in Hong Kong, actually this topic of, you know, moving overseas is being brought up in Hong Kong quite often.
Yeah,
in my community, at least, because of all the social unrest and political changes. I do have friends that are interested, but I think his interest is in Hokkaido. And then he's actually thinking about Hokkaido in the winter and then Okinawa in the summertime, which would be perfect. And I think he is also thinking about the route of, you know, starting his own company and then hiring either locally or hiring from Hong Kong, moving someone from Hong Kong to help him manage the business in Japan.
Okay.
We can talk more about going down this route and how you could help, then I can probably share with him as well if he's, you know, I'm not sure if he's just talking about it or if he's actually if he really, really want to go for it. But I think he'll be interested as well.
Does he speak Japanese, though? Because who's ever running the place will need to communicate with local suppliers and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so he does not. But then we have a couple other friends who do speak Japanese. They study abroad in Japan during college for a couple of years. So they do speak Japanese fluently, at least daily conversation for something that is like legal document that I'm not sure if they are able to do that. But then they are very fluent in spoken Japanese.
Okay, that's good. And would any of those people also be a potential co-investor, just so you can get a bigger place that would be worth running as a business? Because if you're just going for these tiny up to 5-6 rooms, it might not be worth it again.
That I'm not quite sure, because when he looked, we looked at properties together sometimes, and then when he looked at Hokkaido properties, he is also looking at like maybe 3-4 rooms property that rent out as Airbnb. I'm not sure in his mind how many of those he's like of those houses he's trying to purchase, but then it might be. He might be interested if that's a better option, I think. Just whatever makes better sense, I think.
Well, just let him know also that 3-4 rooms, unless he's going to be living in them and running them himself, 3-4 rooms are not going to be worth hiring people to manage for you. And even the management companies who charge a commission, they don't tend to take on a place that's less than about 10 rooms. It's just not worth their while. So if you do want to run it as a business and set up a company that's going to have company upkeep costs, I think you want to think a little bit bigger than those property samples that you've sent to me.
Okay, I understand. I drew for a lot of, I heard there are quite a few abandoned or closing smaller ryokan or hotels.
Something like that, yeah, that would be much better. A ryokan that's going out of business and has, say, 8, 9, 10 rooms, that would be a lot better to start with. And they're also probably better built to cater to guests, so you won't have to do much. They've already had the in license, so there's not going to be much renovation required to bring them up to that.
Oh, okay. So when we purchase, if we do choose that route, buying those property, they usually come with the license already. Does the license go together with the property or with the person who lies?
The license goes with the combination owner property, so it's a unique license to that owner property combination. But you can continue operating on that license until you apply for the new one. And the fact that they've already received the license means that it'll be fairly easy for you to reapply for it. You're not going to have to make too many big changes to the place. That's the only thing. Whereas if you're buying a house that was just a normal residential house, then you will need to convert it to comply.
Understand. Good. I will talk to my friend and see if, you know, he does think about Hokkaido. Illinois, if he'll be interested in Nagano, where I have my interest in. It'll be perfect. And then, I'll take your advice and then see if we can go down the, you know, starting our business route. So, sorry, I didn't catch earlier that you said that you could help with that as well. You mean starting with the business or?
Well, we can put you in touch with an accountant and a judicial scrivener who can help you set up the company. And when you speak to them, if you find out that you actually need a company which can open a local bank account and you need a company which has a local representative, then we can provide that service. So one of us can be your local representative who's a resident of Japan. We charge 20,000 yen a month for this service. And then you have a local CEO or branch manager kind of thing.
Okay. And that does not have to be a local Japanese, right?
It has to be a long-term resident of Japan, so it'll be someone from our company. But you can set up a company that doesn't have a local representative, just a branch office or sales office of a foreign company. In that case, I'm not sure you'll need to speak to the accountant. I'm not sure how easy it is to open a local bank account for that kind of company, but you may not need that. I mean, you may be able to just charge your guests via the foreign company.
Oh, okay. That's interesting because my friend does have his own business here in Hong Kong. He's has a recruitment company. Okay. So I'm not sure if it'll be easier for him to have a branch in Japan from a recruitment company and, you know, becoming a real estate company in Japan. Would that be possible, or does it have to be the same business, so to say, to have a branch in Japan?
Don't think that should be an issue. I mean, the place can be purchased and run under an already existing company that does different things as well. I don't think it has to be a specifically real estate related company. I mean, it can be a trading company or it can be an accommodation based company. I mean, it can be a lot of things. Really, the accountant would be the better person to give you answers for that. So I can put you in touch with one if you want.
That would be perfect. Yep. I do want to explore more down that route.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
All and right, you yeah. add the one question in your email that I haven't answered about natural disaster prone areas.
Right, correct, correct.
So that usually refers to areas that are prone to landslides. They can't really designate areas that are prone for earthquakes because otherwise half the country would be like in a danger zone. But
right, I understand that process. I want to check with you.
That usually refers to landslides, and landslides are covered by insurance if they are caused by an earthquake, because your earthquake insurance will cover anything that's indirectly related to the earthquake as well. Might not be covered in case of a typhoon, but in any case, you're running into that same official evaluation thing. So your insurance policy payout is based on the official evaluation of the property. So I wouldn't expect 100% of the purchase price to come back to you in case of a disaster. I'd say 50-60% at best.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Understand. No. Okay. Yeah, good.
All right.
Thank you. Yep, that's it for okay. now. I'm sure if I might have more questions later, but then, yeah, I think I can email you that. Or and then I'll be very interested in talking to the accountant about, you know, starting business in Japan. And how about now that Japan, you know, not at the moment, how are you taking new business visas, like now that the border is still not fully open?
Visas are still a bit of an issue here. Renewing them and issuing new visas are still not really a thing. But I think, I mean, they're letting resident, they didn't even let resident foreigners back into the country until now. And now they're letting us back in if we leave. So hopefully if there aren't any second, third, fourth waves, we should see the tourists, I hope, coming back at least by early next year.
Right.
But I think just based on everything that we've spoken on about so far, before you actually go looking at setting up companies and visas, do you want to maybe talk to your friends and see how you're going to solve the minimum size, budget, staff thing? Because if we just go plowing on ahead and set up a company and you start paying annual upkeep costs, and then it's, you know, it's going to end up another 2 or 3 years of saving before you can buy a place that's big enough to be profitable. You might be better off just doing that when you're actually closer to pulling the trigger, I think.
Okay.
Just trying to save you money. I mean, we're happy to take your money and represent you at any point, but maybe just plan a little bit ahead and... Because again, if we go ahead and buy a place like that, like the ones that you've sent to me now, so we can buy them individually under your name, or we can buy them under a company that you set up. But I very much doubt you'll be able to make any money off them before you've actually solved the staffing and the renovations that might be required and so forth. So maybe a bit more research before we actually jump head first into it, kind of thing. So if you want us to research Minpaku requirements and architecture companies for any particular areas that you're interested in, let me know and we'll just bill you by the hour. That'll be cheaper too.
Okay, then we
can give you some more info on that particular area that will help you just better evaluate what you'll need to put into a place that you're going to buy.
Okay, yeah, perfect. I have those the alley information that so we can go that route as well for researches.
So there you have it. Not as simple as it is in other countries, particularly for those among you who are not planning on living in the property and running the business on your own. So well worth considering all of the associated costs and procedures that are involved. And if you're going to be marketing the place online, like most guest house owners do these days, you probably want to get in touch with our second sponsor that I've mentioned, not only you, but so if you happen to have or you're working for a business that's doing any kind of online sales or just promoting or looking to promote any sort of online presence, let me introduce you to a close contact of ours, aptly named Humble Bunny. Now, aside from being really great at naming businesses, what Humble Bunny do is they offer digital sales and traffic optimization for companies that are really trying to find that next phase of growth. So they've worked with some very well-known brands like Coca-Cola, Bose, Ralph Lauren, but also with a whole bunch of medium-sized businesses as well, which is really their bread and butter. And they've got a hyper-results-oriented portfolio of successful case studies that you can check out. But most importantly, they're really amazing listeners. They just seem to get it when talking business targets and even, you know, God forbid, internal politics, which is the case for some of you bigger business staffers out there. So I was checking out some of their case studies recently, and I've noted that they brought one smaller brand from something like 40 conversions a month, conversions being sales, and all the way up to over 600, and that's in less than a year and on a pretty limited budget. So if you're looking to implement or bolster an e-commerce strategy or just generate more traffic, whether it's from Japan or elsewhere, shoot them an email at inquisitive@humblebunny.com and ask to connect directly with Nate. Let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast or just mention that you were referred by NTI, and that should get you through the door and well on your way to a profitable and well-oiled online marketing machine. So that's it from us for today, folks. Thank you so much for being with us and lending us your ear for the length of this episode. And if you did enjoy it, we would really appreciate it if you could hop onto the iTunes store or Spotify or wherever it might be that you're tuning in from and just leave us a short review or even just click on one of the stars to give us a star rating. We're hoping for 5 stars, of course, but whatever you honestly think we deserve would be great. And also please share this podcast with your networks if you think there might be anyone in them who could also benefit from our content. And of course, also just let us know what you think. So leave us any comment or any question in the comment section of whichever social media post have led you here. We would really love to know what you think and also to hear from you on any topic that you want us to discuss here on the podcast. After all, your interest is what keeps us going and keeps us in business. So the more the merrier. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, from all of us here at NTI, have a great day or night ahead. Stay safe, stay at home if you can. And if you do have to go out there, please wear your masks. Until next time, wishing you all the best. Yoroshiku. Thank you.